This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Ready? Let's go. Give me a vacation.
Vacation!
Give me a golf course.
70 courses!
Let's get a water sport.
Paddleboarding!
Can I get excursions?
Whale watching!
Time for chill vibes.
Beach yoga!
How about a garden tour?
Balboa Park!
Give me a dolphin. What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hello and welcome to Savor, a production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum, and today we have an episode for you about baked beans.
And I promise it is a good one. It is a fun one. It has one of my very favorite facts that I have discovered and not expected in it in a long time. So
okay, cool.
Yeah.
Now I'm curious to know which one that is.
I shall point it out when we arrive. I think it'll be pretty clear. it's a pretty solid fact. But we chose this because as we're recording it and as it first comes out, it is Independence Day approaching here in the United States.
Independence Day weekend. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
And baked beans are, in fact, a very popular Independence Day side dish here.
They are. more on that in a second. Happy Independence Day if you're celebrating. I just complained at length to Lauren and our Atempa producer, Max Williams, about the fact that I am running a race this weekend, and I am very concerned about it. But it's going to happen.
I wouldn't say you complained. I'd say that you expressed concern. Yes.
A lot of concern.
Yes.
I feel a lot of concern right now. but... You both uplifted me, so I'm gonna try to power through.
all we did was say that we don't run, and so therefore any amount of running that you do sounds impressive to us. But if that uplifted you, I'm excited about it.
Anything that impresses Lauren Vogelbaum and Max Williams, that's pretty good in my book.
Perfect. Perfect. I will say, y'all, if you hear some little bumps and noises in the background, it's not the ghost of Annie's former running prowess. it is rather my gray cat has been a little bit sick the past couple days. I was away for a few days for the first time since shutdown, and he promptly worked himself into a nervous urinary tract stone, but he's on the mend. He's back and making noise in the studio. So super into it. Luckily, he hasn't deleted any large portions of our outline yet.
Just highlighted some, but that's okay.
He did.
We're all here for you, Great Cat. We're supporting you.
Oh, we're supporting you too, Annie. Support all around.
That's what we're all about here. So baked beans were an occasional food on July 4th in our family. Like, I can count maybe once or twice. But interestingly to me, I've gone to a few international U.S. Independence Day celebrations. So I went to one in China and I went to one in Belgium. And baked beans were at both of those. So clearly, I mean, I guess the internet would also tell you that. That it is a traditional food to have on the U.S. Independence Day. But that was just interesting to me of the foods they chose as someone who didn't really eat them.
Yeah, growing up, yeah. Mm-hmm. I wonder if that's like a Southern thing. Growing up in Ohio, like that was a very like summer, especially Independence Day coated food for me. Mm-hmm. And among a lot of the... I guess like northern based humans that I know today, it's still like to me, it's definitely like a key side dish of Independence Day barbecues, and I'm not sure why.
Yeah,
because I feel like no one really eats that much, but someone always brings them.
Right. It's just like one of those things you have to have, but yet no one seems to really want. But no one seems to really be able to say that they don't really want it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, and I do want them. I quite like them. But yeah, anyway.
Yeah, so on the flip side of my experience, when I was staying in this really small, tiny hostel in London for a few weeks, there was this breakfast that was provided as part of the cost. And it typically consisted of this huge tower of buttered bread, like bigger than my head, ridiculous amount of buttered toast, excuse me, yeah, and grilled tomato slices and baked beans with tea or coffee. And at the time, this was new to me. This was news to me and new to me. I didn't know that the baked beans were a part of this traditional breakfast, but I loved it. I actually really enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I love the bean component of a traditional English or Irish breakfast. I want more protein. I don't want all of it to come from eggs. Yes, I'm so excited when I get that. And it goes so well with all of the other little stuff on the plate. Oh, it's so nice.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it too. I did go on a very big bean bag chair and a beanie baby rabbit hole for this and then decided that maybe I should appropriate my time more efficiently. But just know that I really wanted to talk about that in this episode. Fascinating stuff.
Fascinating. Oh, okay. I believe you. That is not any part of the rabbit holes that I went down today, but I look forward to hearing about that. Is it appropriate for a food show at some point? Maybe a different episode?
You know, I feel like this is going to be one of those important saver questions where we're going to have to sit down and really, really get to the bottom of what saver is all about. And I think a beanbag chair might be it.
I love this. I love that like our big existential crisis might come thanks to beanbag chairs and or beanie babies into that.
It feels right. It feels right.
Yeah.
But we can have our existential crisis later, but for now, I think this brings us to our question.
I think it does.
Baked beans. What are they?
Well, baked beans are typically not baked, but are rather a type of stewed bean dish consisting of dried white beans that are reconstituted and slow cooked in a sort of a savory, sweet, tangy gravy, served warm as a lunch or dinner side dish or part of breakfast platters or on toast or sandwiches. So let's talk about the beans. The type of beans used in this dish are usually white beans, also called navy beans. Not navy like the color, like navy is in the naval branch of the military. Also called haricot beans in British English. These are beans of a variety from the wide species Phaseolus vulgaris, I think is how you might say it. I didn't take Latin. I don't know. They're the seeds of the plant, which means they contain lots of great nutrition for little plant babies and for us. The beans grow in pods and usually dry on the vine before being harvested and processed, and that means that they are fairly non-perishable, but also that they have to be, reconstituted or rehydrated prior to use. The gravy. It's usually a sauce made from a tomato puree and or cooked onion sort of base with some kind of sweetener and rich and flavorful options like molasses or brown sugar or maple syrup are common. A touch of vinegar, some salt and pepper, mustard, and some other herbs and spices like woody kind of savory things like bay and rosemary, sage and thyme, stuff like that are pretty common. And then some kind of starch will usually be used either from the cooking beans themselves or from an outside source, will be used to thicken the sauce up a little bit. They can be made vegetarian, but are often cooked with a small amount of pork product, bacon or salt-cured pork, something like that, or hot dogs for flavor. And often the vegetarian versions will have a little bit of a smoke flavor or something umami, maybe like a little mushroom broth or something added to replicate that. And the result is just this hearty comfort food that's really childhood nostalgic for a lot of the English-speaking world. And I will say, I laughed out loud a lot during my reading for this one. But perhaps the hardest at this lead line written by one Oliver Thring in The Guardian, quote, "All your life you've been lied to. Turns out they're not bloody baked beans. They're stewed beans. They do not do what they say on the tin."
I can just imagine a dramatic scene in a movie where you like drop to your knees. It's raining, lightning across the sky. And you're like, "Stewed. They were never baked."
It's David Tennant with the rain on him in that end scene in Doctor Who. And he's like, "Not bloody baked."
I want that so badly. I want it. Oh,
heck. All right. Y'all English, y'all, or British in general, like write in or send in your videos.
Your creations. Oh my gosh, that would be so good. Yes, please do that.
Oh, heck. And you can make baked beans from scratch, but they are often bought pre-prepared in cans or tins, as I suppose you would refer to them, in the non-American part of the English-speaking world. And I will say some home recipes do call for baking sometimes, so it's not always stewed beans.
They're not always a bloody lie. I love this so much. What about the nutrition?
It of course depends on exactly what you put into them. Many canned foods do contain a bunch of added sugars and salts. So, you know, read your nutrition labels. But beans are pretty good for you. You know, they've got a good punch of protein and minerals and soluble fiber. And although in general, fresh or frozen produce is best, canned beans are a pretty okay option because what you generally lose through canning is vitamin content, and that's not really where beans shine that much anyway. Plus, the canning process reduces the compounds in beans that that muck about with your digestive system's capability to absorb minerals. So that's good. And also, the canning process, the cooking process, will increase available fiber molecules. So that's cool. Research has shown that baked beans are a pretty great option for getting like quick and easy nutrients into your diet, especially as a replacement for less healthy snacks and sides. Watch that salt and sugar content and hydrate. Always hydrate. But for best results, make your baked beans from scratch with a minimum of those sugars and salts to taste. Also, I have a gas aside here.
Oh, I cannot wait.
Because beans are, as we all know, the musical fruit.
We all know it.
Yep, it is known. So beans can indeed make you more gassy, especially if you don't eat them regularly, because they contain types of fiber that your body cannot digest. However, microbes that live in your gut sure can digest them. And so what happens is those microbes eat those fibers and then they excrete gases, which will build up in your guts until you pass them out. Meaning that, yes, the primary reason that you fart is that microbes inside you are farting, and then you fart out their farts.
The true circle of life.
It is. It is. It's the circle of farts. Mm-hmm. Hat tip to Ben Bolin and the old days of the Brain Stuff YouTube series for the exact phrasing on that one.
Getting to the bottom of these very important questions behind the rhymes we all said as children.
Uh-huh.
We do have some numbers for you.
Gosh, we do. All right. So baked bean sales in the U.S. As of 2012 were worth some $530 million per year.
Wow. As of 1993, Massachusetts has a state bean, the baked navy bean. Apparently, I guess this is really, most people know this. I didn't know this, but Boston is sometimes called Bean Town.
Yeah, that's one of its nicknames.
Yes. And the navy bean is sometimes called the Boston bean or the Yankee bean, which is a Seinfeld reference. There's an episode where Elaine is feeding this guy Yankee beans. I won't go into why. Well, she calls them Yankee beans and she's like singing this song. And I was like, what the heck is a Yankee bean? Now I know.
There you go.
According to the company, Heinz Baked Beans has a 70% market share in the UK. And every day, about 2.3 million British people eat this product from about 1 million cans.
I've seen numbers up to 2 million cans a day in the UK.
Ooh.
Yeah. As of 1999, annual consumption of baked beans per capita in the UK was just over 5 kilos. That's nearly 12 pounds.
Wow.
And as of 2016, Heinz's Wigan, is that how you would say that? Wigan plant in, it's in Manchester, ish. It is the largest baked bean factory in the world. And as of 2016, it was capable of producing over 3 million cans of beans every 24 hours during peak season, with the total process from bean arrival to complete tin taking about 2 hours. And they process some 50,000 tons of raw beans per year.
That's a lot of beans. That's
a lot of beans. Furthermore, in case you were wondering, very similar to the Tiffany blue, the Heinz bean turquoise is in fact a trademarked color.
I think I have that mascara. Mm-hmm. Heinz bean turquoise.
Meanwhile, in the United States, Bush's brand is the bean leader. In Tennessee, there is a Bush's Beans Visitor Center, Museum, and Cafe at one of the company's long-running sites, where under normal circumstances, some 150,000 visitors a year come through. It opened in 2010, and Bush's sells round about 20 varieties of baked beans.
I want to visit this place.
Right?
I very much want to visit.
You can watch videos in a giant can of beans. Well, it's a giant bean can. There's no beans in it. There's just you and videos.
I see. My brain, my brain was like, what?
I could see it going there. I was trying to pull you back.
Short-circuiting.
Yeah.
But this brings us to another place I would very much like to go. And this is the fact I mentioned at the top that I was not expecting to uncover researching this episode.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
There's a Baked Beans Museum of Excellence in Wales. That's what it's called. It is operated by a, quote, superhero who loves baked beans called Captain Beanie. Apparently, the guy behind this, Barry Kirk, got the idea for the whole thing after breaking the record for sitting naked in baked beans in 1986. 100 hours.
Oof.
I would have some thoughts after sitting 100 hours naked in some baked beans.
Same.
Mm-hmm. He legally changed his name to Captain Beanie in 1991.
Captain Beanie also holds the records for the longest anyone has held a plate of beans on toast in one hand while walking on a treadmill. This This is referred to as the Beans on Toast-a-thon, and his record is 12 hours.
Was it just him? Was anyone else competing?
I don't want to conjecture. He holds the record for the fastest anyone has run a marathon while holding a plate of baked beans on toast. His time was 5 hours, 46 minutes, and 25 seconds.
Hey.
And this was in 2008 at the Flora London Marathon, and he did not, in fact, spill the beans.
Not Captain Beanie. Never.
Never.
He's got some baked beans tattooed on his head. You really look this up. There are images. They're going to brighten your day, I promise. He sounds like a really interesting fellow. He's done a lot of charity work. He has done a lot of races. He's climbed a lot of mountains. Captain Beanie has gotten around.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so have baked beans within the world record category. There are a lot of baked beans related world records. There's a Guinness for the largest pot of baked beans, which was set in 2012 in Macedonia with 5,600 liters of baked beans. That's about 1,500 gallons. It's a lot of baked beans.
It is. Mm-hmm.
The most popular record to attempt seems to be the records for eating the most baked beans with a toothpick, sometimes called a cocktail stick, within a certain period of time, 1 minute, 3 minutes, and 5 minutes. An American by the name of David Rush toppled the previous records in one go in 2018, eating 68 in 1 minute, 178 in 3 minutes, and then 278 in 5 minutes.
Whew. I would stab myself. I would stab the heck out of my mouth if I tried to do this.
Oh, gosh, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, danger. baked bean danger. There's also a record for a team of four in 2 minutes, and they got 429 beans, and that was set in the United Kingdom. There's also a Guinness record for the most baked beans eaten with chopsticks in 1 minute. That record is held by one Tanaka Chisato, who in Tokyo in 2019 apparently popped 71 beans into her mouth during the first 53 seconds, leaving herself 7 seconds to chew and swallow, and then, with just 3 seconds left, popped one last bean, beating the previous record.
Wow.
And that flair for the dramatic, I think, is what really makes a good bean eater.
Yet again, Hollywood letting us down. Why have we not seen this movie where it's like at the wire and then pops one more bean in her mouth? It's a real shame.
It is. It is. Hollywood, you fail us again.
Once again. But the history of baked beans did not fail us in terms of how interesting it is.
Absolutely. And we will get into that history after we get back from a quick break for a word from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit Pronamel.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico.
We've talked in a bunch of different episodes about facets of Puerto Rican cuisine, like the dish mofongo, made of savory, deep-fried mashed plantains studded with some kind of tasty protein, and the creation of the cool, creamy piña colada. But there is so much more there. I've actually never been. You have a tiny bit of experience, don't you?
Yes. Unfortunately, it was a very tiny bit of experience. I was there for about a day. I'm kicking myself for that now. I remember having delicious rums, delicious drinks. But I want to go back because, so many episodes we do on here, when we're talking about food from Puerto Rico, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds amazing. We're trying to get a savor team trip together.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, we're trying to get a trip to a lot of places, but this is really top of the list. Even putting together this ad read made me hungry. I was like, oh, I want to try those things. Yeah, as we've talked about before, there are influences there from African and Spanish and native Taino foodways. The culinary scene sounds amazing, and we want to go, and I'm hungry. No passport is required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. You can learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Today, I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
Navy beans and the relatives of navy beans originated in the Americas. I think that could be a whole separate thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, I found a very intense scientific article about all the different, like, genetic branching off periods of these beans. And I was like, okay, not today, not today. These beans were staples for Native Americans, and alongside maize and squash were one of the three sisters that were agriculturally foundational. I know we've talked about that before.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Some tribes might have used earthenware pots covered with hot stones to cook beans with bear fat, maple syrup, and venison. And when colonists arrived, they might have observed the Native Americans doing this and started making them on their own. But, or perhaps they did. Like, okay, the Native American version of this story is the one that is commonly told, but the details are quite sparse if they exist at all. No specific tribe is ever mentioned, and tribes in that region didn't really bake, nor is it likely they would have used maple syrup in a bean dish. Mm-hmm. If they had any at all. There are documents from that time showing that they were willing to bargain quite a bit to get some maple syrup. So that does not suggest that they would use it in this dish. But that is something you have to, like, really dig deep in the baked bean to find, because it is so commonly told.
Yeah.
And we're going to get into more on why that is in a minute. Some food historians believed that these New England baked beans, the precursor of Boston baked beans, most likely were an amalgamation of Native American recipes and methods and a bean and bacon dish out of England, common during the Middle Ages. Again, I was kind of like puzzling over that one in terms of, I guess, the beans used, but okay. Others think that North African and Spanish Jews had long been eating baked beans on the Sabbath, and sea captains arriving at New England ports introduced this idea or tradition to them after witnessing it in Africa and or the Mediterranean. Or maybe it can be traced back to the French bean dish, cassoulet, and that French Canadians were in fact highly influential in this dish.
Yeah. There were beans being used in cuisines in England and France and around the Mediterranean before the era of colonization, which started circa the 1500s. And those were other species of beans, lentils, favas, stuff like that. And different beans and their uses hopped back and forth across the Atlantic a few times over the centuries.
Right. And these beans were useful for colonists who were observing Sabbath on Sunday and were forbidden from cooking on that day. The beans could be cooked Saturday night for dinner and then kept warm overnight and eaten for breakfast or as part of a cold sandwich for lunch. Up in New England, this led to stewed beans cooked with salt pork or other meats, various spices, and molasses, which was probably introduced in the 18th century, the product of the forced labor of enslaved peoples in the Caribbean and shipped to Boston for rum making, which I believe we talked about in our rum episode.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Molasses is considered a byproduct of the sugar refining industry. It's thus a lot cheaper than granulated refined sugar and thus worked its way into a lot of home recipes around that time as a cheaper alternative to the steadily less expensive, but still pricey sugar.
Right. And these stewed beans were often served with brown bread, cornbread, or biscuits. Confusingly, though, most of these recipes were still labeled as baked beans. And yes, that is a confusion that lasts to this day, as we learn from the bloody lie we've all been fed. baked beans as a working class food were, they were filling, they were cheap, and they were packed with protein. So that was a great food option for people who were working or struggling in any type of situation with money or what was available to them. But also, it was a food that people would bring to events, including Independence Day parties after the American Revolutionary War. Navy beans, the name, it was coined in the mid-1800s since these beans were a staple for the U.S. Navy. And I got this out of an official U.S. Navy document, so I am trusting that that is the truth.
Yeah.
These stewed slash baked beans with pork and molasses were the first to be canned in the U.S. in the 1860s, right around the Civil War, and soon after the invention of the can opener.
Yeah. Always remember that canning existed for a good few decades before the can opener was invented. Just think about the hilarity and devastation.
I often
this
do.
Must have led to.
I often remember our video of trying to open the corn can beef. Oof.
Oh yeah. Even after. So baked beans as a dish are quite good for canning because beans don't have an unpleasant texture when they're heated and canned. Also, the acid content from the tomatoes and or onions allows for a shorter cooking time during the process and thus a better preservation of flavor and nutrients. Also, the salt and sugar already present in recipes are good preservatives because they prevent the growth of microbes by kind of occupying the water content of foods. So,
yes. And of course, as per usual in these episodes, a handful of companies claim to be the first to sell canned baked beans, including the Burnham and Morrill Company in 1876. And Henry Hines, yes, that one, may have started mass producing them in 1895. As early as 1886, Hines baked beans were being sold as a luxury item at high-end stores in London. It was towards the end of the 19th century that the first written recipe for Boston baked beans appeared in Fanny Farmer's cookbook. By this point, the molasses was a key ingredient. It was a key differentiating ingredient. Ground mustard and salt pork were typical too, but that molasses was like the thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And speaking of the thing, this whole Boston baked beans thing might have been a part of a concerted effort to create New England foods that were an attempt to recapture foods that Europeans ate prior to the American Revolution. This whole movement also largely ignored the history behind the dish and all the other foods and traditions of contemporary New Englanders and immigrant populations that were happening at the same time. These ideas around New England foods were carefully chosen, crafted, and presented in print publications, often alongside less than accurate tales about how traditional and American they were. Kind of similar to the Thanksgiving story, really painting this positive light. But that was interesting. And we're going to talk about, there's a whole book about this, But it was interesting to read of all these other things that were happening that were not considered New England foods, but these chosen foods.
Yes.
Were. Yes, I learned a lot about New England food in this episode. Uh-huh. And this whole thing coincided with a drop in the price of sugar and a drive to uplift molasses in the face of that. Perhaps. Makes sense to me. In 1908, A.J. Bush opened a cannery in Tennessee.
They started selling pork and beans in 1934, and cans of that were distributed to American troops during World War II.
According to the company's website, in 1969, they arrived at a new secret family recipe that they put in all caps, which I thought was quite funny, for simmering their beans.
Supposedly, this recipe comes from a childhood favorite recipe of one of AJ's kids. His mother, Catherine, shared it with the family for the company on the condition that it would never be distributed.
Ooh, never.
And that is why Bush's and their spokes dog are so insistent that it's a secret.
That's why. Okay, got it. As canned beans became more available across the country, they earned a spot as barbecue and potluck staples. Okay, I never heard of this.
Really?
No, never. Asking for Boston baked beans in Chicago in the 1920s and 30s might mean something different. It was a popular candy that involved peanuts dyed red and coated in sugar so that they appeared bean-like. This is an interesting candy tradition that kind of cracks me up. We talked about it in the candy corn episode. Mm-hmm, and then this one of like agricultural products made into candy or like the shapes.
Yeah.
The largest producer of these candies, Chicago's Ferrara Candy Company, has been making them since 1924. The origin of this candy has been largely lost to history. I didn't dig in too deep, so maybe a future episode, but most publications seem to be like,
Oh, wow. Yeah, no, I've definitely consumed these.
I've never heard of this.
Maybe it's another like kind of northern thing. I bet that we can find some at one of the like at one of the candy shops around town that has like old timey candies.
Oh, we should. I don't know why I got so excited by going to an old timey candy shop, but I bet we can really find some stuff we should talk about on this here show.
Yes. In the late 20s and early 30s, Heinz opened baked bean production plants in the UK and Australia after they had been shipping their products out to both places for a while, but then tariffs started making importation cost prohibitive, so they just opened up plants over in both of those places. And then Australian production would ramp up during World War II when American troops were stationed out in Queensland.
Heinz dropped the pork from their canned baked beans in response to World War II rationing. Many pinpoint their successful Beans Means Heinz ad campaign.
that's means with a Z.
Yes.
And the beans, and the beans with a Z. With a Z.
Double Z.
Z's all around.
Oh, yeah. Triple Z's. What am I saying? this ad campaign, which came out in the 1960s for solidifying this product's place as a British breakfast staple. And I read an article that quite tickled me about, it was a tasting test. I think it was an analysis of several tasting tests in the UK where Heinz consistently comes on the bottom, but people still prefer it because of nostalgia and name recognition.
Yeah, it's really just the name recognition. It's a very powerful thing and very impressive to me.
Yes. However, the iconic British breakfast of beans on toast possibly goes back to 1901. So it seems like maybe they are capitalizing on something that was already there. Mm-hmm. Oh, and I found a really harsh 1985 New York Times article that just dissed Boston baked beans. Really? Claiming that New Englanders only ate them because they had the gall and bad taste to?
Oh.
They compared it to continuing to wear a bad fashion choice, even though everyone's decided it's a bad fashion choice, almost.
Wow.
Yes. And it also went on to say that these baked beans were definitely a food that you should be embarrassed about. not something you should want to reflect America, something that was for poor people, that it was a relic. I will say, I'm unclear on whether the author felt this way. I think they did. But the people they were interviewing was sort of the meat, the beans of this article. but I was reading it like, aghast. Wow.
Well,
I know.
I have nothing to say about that. I can't really tell you one way or another. I can tell you that in 2006, a group of researchers out of Venezuela took the toot out of beans, as Live Science reported. They fermented beans with the types of bacteria that eat those fibers that we can't digest during the production process, thus greatly reducing the amount of those fibers that wind up in our gut for microbes to eat and pass gas there. So, yeah.
Wow.
Pre-fermentation process. Love it.
Science. Let's Science. Make it so you can eat these beans, not toot later. Okay. The history of Boston baked beans is still something that interests folks, clearly. Mm-hmm. In 2020, so last year, Meg Muckenhout, and I hope I'm not totally butchering that, published The Truth About Baked Beans, An Edible History of New England. And this is where I got a lot of my New England food facts. But also, she was very instructive for me of being like, we don't know about this Native American baked beans myth, and everyone's telling it. And I was like, I'm so glad I found this. Thank you. Because I don't want to let you down.
Baked beans had been losing sales for a few years as trends in fresh foods have been increasing, but then saw a pretty serious uptick during the COVID-19 shutdown, being an inexpensive and shelf-stable comfort food.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. And I'm interested to see if I run into them this weekend.
Yeah, I bet you do. You know, I bet you do.
Maybe I've just never noticed them before.
Hmm.
Because people bring a lot of foods to those types of celebrations. You gotta, you know, make your calculations as to what you can fit on your plate. And
yeah,
maybe I just hadn't included the baked bean, and maybe I should give it another glance.
Oh yeah, one way or another, this was for me surprising craving episode. I was like, oh man, I want some beans and Franks right now.
Well, I hope you find them, Lauren.
Yeah, I think this is in my future. I'm excited.
I think so. Well, we hope you've enjoyed this. I really have. I was not expecting it to be this much of a fun one, but it really was.
Yeah. Yes.
However,
absolutely.
Like all good things, it must come to an end.
We do have some listener mail for you.
We do, but first we have one more quick break for a word from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico.
We've talked in a bunch of different episodes about facets of Puerto Rican cuisine, like the dish mofongo, made of savory, deep-fried mashed plantains studded with some kind of tasty protein, and the creation of the cool, creamy piña colada. But there is so much more there. I've actually never been. You have a tiny bit of experience, don't you?
Yes. Unfortunately, it was a very tiny bit of experience. I was there for about a day. I'm kicking myself for that now. I remember having delicious rums, delicious drinks, But I want to go back because, yeah, so many episodes we do on here, when we're talking about food from Puerto Rico, I want that. Mm-hmm. And it sounds amazing. We're trying to get a Savor team trip together.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, we're trying to get a trip to a lot of places, but this is this is really top of the list. Even putting together this ad read made me hungry. I was like, oh, I want to try those things. Yeah, as we've talked about before, there are influences there from African and Spanish and native Taino foodways. The culinary scene sounds amazing, and we want to go, and I'm hungry. No passport is required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. You can learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Today, I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with listener. Fireworks. Fireworks. I was going to try to do the Seinfeld jingle, but you would have no idea.
No, I wouldn't have.
Yankee beans, Yankee beans. Anyway.
Cool. Into it.
Yeah. Thank you. Mark wrote, while listening to your fictional foods Fallout episode, I spent the entire time waiting for you to address my favorite food of the franchise, Sunset Sarsaparilla. While you referenced Nuka-Cola's competitor Vim, I was disappointed that Sunset Sarsaparilla got no mention. Being featured in Fallout New Vegas, Sunset Sarsaparilla is far more common in the game than Nuka-Cola. In the game, Sunset Sarsaparilla replenishes your health without any added radiation, unlike Nuka-Cola. You can even visit the Sunset Sarsaparilla headquarters, where you can meet Festus, an old-timey cowboy animatronic. In the lobby, he provides you with the quest, The Legend of the Star. You see, before the bombs dropped, Sunset Sarsaparilla has started a marketing campaign in which certain bottle caps had a sheriff star printed on the inside. By collecting 50 of these special star caps and bringing them to Festus, the player receives a special reward. I get the impression Annie hasn't played New Vegas, so I won't spoil it for you here. It's my favorite entry of the franchise and well worth a playthrough to experience the complicated moral choices as well as its goofiness, which includes but is not limited to a gang of Elvis impersonators known as the Kings, discovery of a corpse in a fridge in the desert that definitely isn't Indiana Jones, and holy frag grenades. that is, okay, one that's a tongue twister, Sunset Sarsaparilla, see? and yes, I have played Fallout New Vegas, but I... Oh, it's a long, tragic story of many failed laptops for me. But
Oh, no.
I mean, okay. It's not that tragic. Essentially, my laptop couldn't keep up with the speed needed to play it. Mm-hmm. And then it took forever. Mm-hmm. Lauren knows. I put off getting a new laptop for like 5 years after I should have. I'm holding it together with duct tape and injuring myself trying to open it. So I do have it, and I have started playing it, but you are correct. I have not finished it, so I guess I never arrived. At this mini this quest. But I've heard very good things about this game, and I think I would really like it. So maybe my new laptop can keep up.
Yes. Only time will tell.
Yes.
Amy wrote, after listening to your pimento cheese episode, I want to write in and tell you that my family's simple recipe for pimento cheese uses Miracle Whip, cheddar cheese, and pimentos. I prefer it on celery, not bread, where it pairs better and is less overpowering. I also wanted to share with the two of you about a dessert hot sauce I found at a store that specializes in stuff made here in North Carolina called Toad Sweat. It's a nice mix of sweet and hot and comes in many flavors like key lime and chocolate orange.
Ooh.
Right? Oh, goodness.
Toad Sweat is a great name,
Toad Sweat.
Too.
Heck. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. I'm forgetting their username and or stated name right now, but some excellent listener on Twitter wrote in at some point about a, like, dessert hot sauce on Kickstarter, and I definitely funded it. So I'm getting some in the mail. Heckin' eventually. I'm very excited. And all of this sounds delicious.
Yes. I know I mentioned on the podcast a couple weeks ago that I had all the hot sauces do the hot ones challenge. I undertook it this weekend with half of them.
Oh, yeah.
And it was half from like the bottom half in difficulty and half from the top half in difficulty.
How did it go?
Great. I will admit I was being very cautious. Like,
good.
You know, I didn't coat the wing or anything like that. Very minimal, just little taste. And one of them, not the last dab, was very hot. But the rest, lovely. So maybe I'll get the courage to undertake the whole thing. We'll see.
Yes. That's delightful, though.
Yes. And please keep me updated on your dessert hot sauce because I would like to try it.
I may or may not have ordered enough for both of us. So,
yes! This is why you're the best. It's one of many reasons. Yes. So exciting. Thanks to both of those listeners for writing to us. If you would like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We are also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at SaverPod, and we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard, with special thanks this week to Max Williams, whose name I absolutely know. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.
This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit Pronamel.com.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit RightRug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.